Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Motis, and I'm your host, a Filipina-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration, to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to our sponsors, TrueLearn and PicMonic. PicMonic is an excellent learning resource and study aid for occupational therapy and occupational therapy assistant students, whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam. PicMonic is the only visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams through the use of audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. How I wish I had a learning tool like this back when I was in OT school. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes or code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your PicMonic membership. Happy studying. Today, I'm super excited to introduce you to our guest of honor, Ashley Reyna. Ashley is an uncommon occupational therapist in health technology, building practice management and electronic medical record software. She is a graduate of University of Alberta in 2005 and has worked in pediatrics for most of her career with a specific love for private practice. She is a visionary and a lifelong learner with superpowers including awareness and vulnerability, which makes room for a lot of self-reflection and growth opportunities in her life. She is a mom to three littles, two boys aged 11 and 8, and one girl 8 months old. Throughout her day, she loves to build in moments of yoga, meditation, walking, and swimming. She loves the water and being by the water, swimming, paddleboarding, and just watching. So without further ado, I'd like to present to you Ashley Reyna. Welcome, Ashley.
Well, thank you, Patricia, for that beautiful intro. It's such a joy to have somebody introduce you and you're like, oh yeah, that is me. I do love those things. Thank you for highlighting that.
Oh, you're welcome. It's one of my favorite parts because I also, you know, I see you on video on Zoom, right? And I often look at my guests as I'm reading.
Beaming.
Yes. And there's often a nice smile. So I love to bring that smile out. And, you know, this is you, right? This is what you're all about. And so excited to have you on your show so we can talk about your specialty and your niche.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here and to share my story with you.
Super exciting. Before we delve into all of the juicy details of your specialty, I'd love for you to just share a little bit about yourself, please. I know I talked a little bit already in the bio, but anything else you'd like to share?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. You gave like a really well-rounded rounded scope there. I think you know, I've worked in a lot of different practice areas over the years. In the first probably 10 years of my career, I was in a new position every year, just between getting married and having babies and being on mat leaves. And then my husband was in school and we moved around, and having that experience, I got to be in acute care. I got to be an outpatient. I was in schools. I was in a private clinic. And it gave me the chance to see systems in a lot of different settings and to see the different ways people did things. And I think that really, at one point I was like, oh, why can't I keep a job? But I mean, I was like, okay, it really is circumstantial. It's not like I'm trying to have a new job every year. But when I then got to the point where I started developing Therabyte, I was able to really lean on that experience mm-hmm. of being in all of these different practice settings over the years with all these different systems I'd been exposed to. And it just, it gave me a sense of what was happening around in the different communities I'd worked in, and the mm-hmm. inefficiencies and the clunkiness and the problems. And it gave a lot of the inspiration for what became Therabyte. So there's a little something.
Oh, I love that. It's almost like you kind of pulled together all of your experiences, right? And in fact, you know, created purpose in terms of, you know, what do I do with all of this? You know, what was consistent here? What did I consistently see that, you know, was ineffective, what worked, and then did something with that? So I absolutely love that. And so happy that you're sharing your work with us. Do you mind sharing what motivated you to contribute to this podcast series?
Yeah, well, I, you know, I think that we all, it's so fun to meet different business owners, and we all have our own story. And our story is usually where, what brings us to what it is we contribute, right? The, I know one of your guests I was listening to is in home organization, and I listened to her podcast and I was like, that's such a cool practice area, you know, and uncommon. And I just think we all have something to share and contribute. And when we are willing to lean into those uncommon areas, we give other people permission to go down those avenues. And I, and there was a time where I was the only OT in tech that I knew, and that's changing. And I'm fortunate for that. There's definitely more OTs in the tech world. And I would say most of the ones I've met are working in tech, like UX, UI design is becoming more popular, or people doing customer success for different tech companies. There's still not a lot of us that are building tech. And I think that, you know, with within kind of that UX, UI design mindset, we're really good at fitting tech to people and what users are looking for. And when you match that with someone who understands the tech, then you can say, okay, well, this is really, this is what we need. Now, like make, like turn it into technology for us.
You need to listen first, right? You need to first understand what this, what that system needs, or what that system needs to work efficiently. I think this is a great segue into you describing your work.
I mean, it's been such a crazy journey. I mean, it was almost 9 years ago that we had the, you know, so I run Therabyte with my husband. He's the programmer designer of the application. And it was really his idea. I was complaining about having to, like, it's sometimes I'm like, oh, it's so silly, but I really like systems and I really like being efficient. And the fact that I had to like copy and paste the name and copy and paste the birth date between like Excel and Word. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like this is, I'm wasting so much time switching between these different systems. And it's like, that's not what I want to be doing with my time. I don't want to sit for, you know, hours at the end of the month doing invoicing or, you know, making sure my charting is like the way it needs to be and it's secure and all of that. So that's really where it came from. I just, I really wanted to serve my clients and have that autonomy in private practice and that freedom within private practice. And I also really wanted it to be more efficient. And so that's where the initial idea of Therabyte came from. And what it has turned into is a practice management software and EMR that guides you through your workflow with a client. So it takes you right from onboarding your client, getting them to fill out their intake and their consent forms, doing that all digital, bringing all of the information into one place, and then being able to document, schedule and document and appointment reminders, and then flowing all into creating your invoices to then get paid for working with your client. So it's Yeah, that's
comprehensive. I love it.
That's what it is.
And again, you created this out of a need that you sort of saw throughout your career, right? And sort of building this software that you feel would be less time consuming, would just be more efficient and would work better for all therapists. And in speaking to those therapists, who are your, are therapists, your clients? Who are generally the people that you serve?
Initially, my passion was really serving the solo therapist. So, and I think that's because that's who I could identify with. So that solo therapist who's in private practice. And so that's where we started serving that solo therapist and really appealing to that. And now we're growing into serving teams. So we're not only serving OTs, we're serving OTs and SLPs and behavior consultants and counselors. And multidisciplinary teams. I think the biggest clinic we have is like 50 plus employees. So everywhere from the solo therapist to, you know, to that multidisciplinary clinic.
Got it. Okay. So you have the software, you offer the software to solo practitioners and groups. And can you talk us through, I guess, what happens after that? So I just start to imagine myself in these settings and I'm often trained, right, on how to use a specific software. So there's the whole training the staff on how to use it. Can you talk us through the steps after that?
Yeah. So we offer a trial to people. And what I really find that, especially when we're dealing with sensitive health information, we want to know what that's going to feel like, what it's going to look like. People want to have a feel for it before they're ready to sink their sink into that system and adopt that system into their business. When we're onboarding teams, generally we'll onboard the administrative and the owner first. And so we bring them in and they get trained up on how, what that flow is going to look like as they transition from whatever they were doing before to then using Therabyte. So we go through what that's going to look like, and then we identify how we're going to train their staff. And we have an entire library of articles and videos. So we pull from those and we share those depending on the specific features and the workflow for that team. Then we'll share some of that information from our help desk. And then we will do an onboarding call with the team, usually recorded if, you know, people can't be there. And then in addition to that, we have a support desk where people can submit tickets and ask questions if they're not able to find something in the help desk. So that's a little bit more what it looks like for a team when we're onboarding. And then what's really unique about the teams is they often have their own admin staff. And so we try to find someone within their staff that's going to be the champion, someone that's going to be that person that is coming on very early on. They get to know the software better. And then that becomes the go-to person within their team so that they're trying to answer some of their questions internally before they come and then lean on our team. Okay. Now with the solo practitioners, that's different because they are, they're on their own. And so I offer an onboarding session and some people book that and some people don't. Some people prefer to, you know, do their own learning. And depending on which system you're coming from, you know, some people find if you've been using a different software and then you're adopting into Therabyte, sometimes there's like a bit of a brain shift of how that
a flows. Learning curve.
Yeah. But I, most of the people, I would say 90% of the people that we onboard, they're like, oh, it's so intuitive. It just makes sense. Like it was really easy to learn because everything's just, it flows the way my brain thinks and the way my brain does therapy. And so the software really is doing most of the heavy lifting in terms of bringing people on. And that's actually in this upcoming year, we are going to be building in in-app onboarding. So when somebody logs in for the first time, they're going to be prompted to ask some questions. And then that's going to send them down a training tutorial to get them familiar with the different features. I'm really excited for that.
Oh, wow. So I guess on that note, my first question is your team, right? I know you mentioned your husband, he's a programmer, so he's the tech guy. You're pretty techy yourself, you know, in our conversations, we've talked about that, right? Who else is part of your team and how large is your team?
So we have four developers that, so when you're talking about developers, we've got a, what they would call a full stack developer. We've got front end, back end, and then someone who does more in terms of integration between features. And then someone who is more familiar on the performance side of things. So they spend more time on the back end, just making sure that things are running smoothly, that there's good transitions between different features. So we have four developers that we work with. We also, this year, we took on a intern UX. So she's an OT. She is looking to transition from being an OT to being a UX designer. And I actually, we met at the Rehab Tech Summit in early 2022. And she has been interning with Mike for she was about to end, and then in the midst of her job transition, she actually asked if she could extend for another 3 months. So she's been a really awesome part of our team, and she's had some special projects that she's working on in terms of user experience and like just bridging that gap. So that's been really, that's because that has been more me when we were really building the foundation of the software. That was me. I was the user experience, and then I would have those conversations with Mike, and now that's transitioning more. So, and another part of our team is our customers. We are always looking to our customers to give us feedback in terms of how things are flowing, what features are missing. And so they become, you know, part of our team to help us understand that user experience.
Yes.
And then there's the front end business side of our team. I have marketing coaches that I work with. There's a marketing agent, and then another marketing agency that we work with for some advertising, and then a customer account manager and a virtual assistant, as well as I forgot on the back end, we have a customer support person who helps run the help desk with Mike.
Got it.
It's getting bigger.
Yeah. You've got a full staff.
Yeah.
But that just says so much about your business and how it's thriving. But also, you know, for our listeners and for myself, it's just important to kind of know the structure around you, right? Mm-hmm. This is the system that you need to support what you're trying to do. And everything is done virtually. Everyone is at home. And
yeah, we're a complete, like, other than Mike and I, we share desk space. But yeah, other than that, everyone works virtually, and we really enjoy it. We do. We're planning our first company retreat next year. We want to get everyone together and in the same space. We've never all been together in the same space. And so we're really hoping to do that. We've started to implement just more ways of connecting as a team. So I mean, the development team definitely gets together, they're our longest employees, technically we're all contractors, but they're our longest team members, and they get together more often, but we're starting to plan events where we're getting together on a quarterly basis. And, you know, just, I think bringing more systems in place, trying to bring more awareness and transparency. So recognizing that it's one thing for Mike and I to have a vision of where we're going, but now we have this team of people. And so now the team needs to have the vision and the mission of where we're going. What are we working on? What are we working towards? And so we did our first meeting like that in October. So just about a month ago. And it was so heartwarming. It was so great to bring everyone together and to say, hey, this is the growth we've had over this year. This is what we've achieved. These are the features that we've released. This is the feedback that we have. And to kind of get the front and the back end of the business talking it was really, really cool.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, bringing Yeah, it's just, again, reflecting. We talked about reflecting earlier, right? And the importance of that skill. I look at it as a skill.
It is.
But being able to bring all of your team together, right? As a leader, as someone who, yeah, designed this team and basically chose, you know, you selected who's going to be a part of it. And now to have that team there with you to reflect on, you know, just the progress and even probably challenges too, but, you know, where the direction of the company.
Yeah, I think when you're building a company, and I would think similar to if you're in private practice and you're building a team, you start out as yourself. It's small, you know, you do things one way. And then as your team gets bigger, you have to modify and adjust, and your systems mm-hmm. need to get more integrated, and you have to, your systems grow as your team grows. And there was definitely a moment in time when I knew we were going to build a team. I knew that that was coming, but you don't know what you don't know. And I definitely remember it would have been 2 years ago. And I just remember being like, oh, we're a real company. Like, we actually built something and other people are using it. And it's like, oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, we're a real company. Like, that's pretty cool. And then it's like, oh, aww. I guess I am the CEO. I guess, oh, like, I'm the leader of a tech company. Yeah, okay, that happened.
You are. And in fact, you have full staffing here too. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's legit. You're legit.
If there was any doubt, no, there's no doubt anymore. But I remember a time, pre-COVID. COVID was really, we got a lot of exposure with COVID. Everyone was online suddenly and really seeing that importance of digital systems. And you know, when we can't be in person, it's like, wow, these digital systems become more important. And so, you know, but definitely pre-COVID, I think we were still like, okay, like, we're doing this, right? We're doing this. Okay. And then, you know, since COVID, it's like, okay, yeah, we're just like on this track moving upward.
Oh, that's great. Let's fill in some gaps. Cause I know we talked about kind of where you started and the various experiences that you had, and then went into the business and, you know, talked about its growth, which is great. For our listeners, can you describe to us how you got there? Like, just fill in the gaps a little bit of, you know, after all of your experience in acute care, I know you talked about, yeah, there's this need for this. And, you know, your programmer husband, Mike, right? And how did, yeah, what conversations happened there? What ideas came up to help you sort of bridge the two?
It was a lot of me talking through problems that I would be having working and then him tinkering and thinking. So he started putting together what we would call mock-ups. And so it's a design. It doesn't do anything, but you can get a feel for what the software would look like, what it could do. Almost like a map. In a sense. And so he started building those, and then he would come to me and ask me questions. And then I would go back and talk to some colleagues and say, hey, like, we're looking at this. What do you think? And then I would bounce different ideas off some of my colleagues. It's like, oh, like, if a system could do this and that, you know, what would you think of it? And then I would bring mockups and I'd show them. And so that's where it started. And there was this point where Mike would be like, I had two little kids at the time. Like, I was working part time. I felt quite busy in all of those things. And he saw the problem bigger, I think, than I did at the time. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we can solve this. Like, I know we can do this. And there came a point where we're like, okay, we've been holding on to this idea for a while. We need to decide, are we doing it? Are we like going full in, or we just need to let it go? Because it was just, you know, like, it was kind of lurking in the background. And it's like, we either need to dive in and try or just move on. So that was in 2016.
Okay.
And we moved. So we had been living in central Alberta in Canada, and we decided to move to BC, closer to Kelowna, where there's a really good thriving tech community. I think they call it Silicon Vineyards, or there's like a relationship to Silicon. Silicon Hills, or no, I think that one's in Utah. Anyways, there's another one. there's this relationship. And so we came out here. We knew there was more of a tech community. And up until that point, Mike had worked as a more in graphic design and less as a programmer. And so he took a job as a programmer. And it was really just us saying, okay, this is it. We're gonna dive in and we're gonna figure this out. There's a organization in Kelowna called Accelerate Okanagan, and they support tech startups. And so we applied to their venture acceleration program, their VAP program, and we pitched Therabyte to them, and we got accepted into their program. And so what their program does is it teaches you to do market validation, do your market research. You build out your business model canvas, and it starts to get you thinking bigger about your idea and how you're going to bring that idea to market. At that point, we hired our first developers and programmers. And then it was me and Mike, like late at night, being like, okay, let's figure out charting. Like, what is that going to look like? And we've got this, you can see it on video. We've got this massive whiteboard.
I see it.
Behind us. And we would just like, map it out, and we would like argue and talk and start to visualize what that would look like. And then he would mock it up, and then the developers would create it, and then I would play with it and tinker with it. So that's that. And and then the biggest thing was, how do we then share this with other people, right? And so once we joked that I was working for another private company, and we joked that I would quit my job for Therabyte, and I did. So
congratulations.
Thank you. There was this point in time where, because I was working for another company, and we had invited them to grow Therabyte with us, we wanted to bring Therabyte into the clinic, and they weren't interested for various reasons, and I won't get into that story, but I needed to be in it and using it more. And so I quit and went totally private on my own again, which I had done before, but we'd move cities. And so I went private again. And so then I was in it, and I was using it every day. And then because then we were able to refine it quicker because we had people in it. So then from there, I brought a couple friends in. So an SLP that I had, two SLPs I'd worked with, an OT who I went to school with. I started, I was trying to scout people out on LinkedIn. I was trying to scout people out through, past university colleagues and schoolmates. And so, just trying to get people to use it. We needed people to use it to give us feedback as to like what they thought of flow and how it was working. So I think that kind of tells the story of, how we got there.
I love everything about it. I mean,
it's certainly not something
romantic.
I can tell you it did not feel romantic. That's for sure.
Just partnering with your partner, right? On such a different level. I mean, my partner and I are in such different lines of work. We always talk about that with our friends, that we're in such different lines of work, that I'm just so tickled by the fact that you two are, he gets it. He gets the charting. And there's something about that that I find a little romantic.
So one day we get an Amazon package, and he opens it up, and I'm like, what did you buy? And he's like, it was this OT book. It was, it's on the shelf over there. Introduction.
Which one did he buy?
He bought Introduction to Occupational Therapy and started reading it. And he's like, you need to read this. I'm like, okay, I've been in OT for almost 15 years at this point. Like, I don't want to read an introduction to OT book. Thank you very much.
But so curious about that book and how he found it and what did they say, you know, how he introduced OT.
He felt like he needed to, you know, just understand. And so he's a real advocate of the profession and that we can focus more on what we do when we have these systems around to support us.
Yes. Well, thank you for sharing how this all came together, you know, leading us to where we are today. You know, we talked about pitching your product to solo practitioners, also groups like small practices. Can you share with us, I guess, anything money matters related? What are the costs? It sounded like you also had to make quite an investment in the development of the product and even the marketing strategies and having staff, right? So anything that you can share about any of that?
Sure. Where do I start with that? So we are to this point self-funded. In the tech world, they call that bootstrapped. I don't think that's a common word outside of tech startups. But basically what that means is we are the ones who built up the company with our own finances.
Okay. Self-financed, basically, right?
What bootstrap means. Yeah, self-financed. so when we were first starting out, we knew we needed to build out a model that was sustainable. And so we decided to work with programmers overseas so that we could work at a rate that would allow us to grow and to iterate. So we have hopes of eventually having a team that's closer to us proximity wise. But we've been able to do what we've done on a fairly conservative budget because of where we've hired people from. Now that is not for everyone. And it's been interesting to hear Mike talk with different people. You have to understand the culture of where you're hiring people from and know how to motivate them and to support them in a different way. And then again, you're working across time zones, which is just another thing to consider when you have a remote team that isn't local to you. So that was how we started. You know, those were our first hires. We're hiring overseas. And then self-funded, we did try to do some investment pitching and that because we felt like we were at a point where we had a product, we knew people liked it, and we just really wanted to get to the next step. And marketing is quite an investment and, you know, to know what is working in marketing and what isn't, it takes time and it takes money to figure those things out. And so we tried to go down the route of looking for an investor about at the same time as we did that, then COVID hit. And so it disrupted that. And then we actually started to get a lot of traction because of everyone being online. So, so we ended up really the feedback that we got from investors was it's so tricky because when you're working with investors, they want to see that you have an idea that's going to 10 times their money. Mm-hmm. So if you're, sorry.
I see a little person. Is there a little person back there?
You can go and get her. Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. It's like that CNN, that correspondent. Remember that? Yes. Right in the beginning of COVID. So cute.
Yes. So when you're looking at pitching to investors, they want to 10 times their money. And And it just was this whole other world to learn about, because I was like, oh yeah, if we have a business that does a million, that's amazing. And they're like, no. We want to invest in businesses that are going to do like 50 million. Like, and I'm like, okay, I thought having a business of four million, like that's great. Like that would be, right. And in the investor world, they call that a lifestyle business. That's not a business that you would invest in, because it's not going to 10 times your money. Because investors, they will probably hit one home run out of 10 people that they invest in. Mm-hmm. And that's why they want to 10x their money. So that's like just this whole other route to go down. And they're looking for traction and growth, and they're looking for an idea that's scalable. And although we have all of those things, they felt that what we kept hearing from people was, you're too niche, and you're too, you know,
small, almost, right? Like yeah, too small. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, well, like, no, not really. But, but it's not, I mean, health tech and EMR, it's not an industry that everybody understands either. Mm-hmm. And so it could be that if we had been pitching to a different group of people, we would have had different feedback. And we're actually now starting to pitch again. And so we took time away from that. We actually decided to go the route of loans. I'm trying to think at what point, because Mike works full time within the company. I'm like three quarters within the company. And so to be able to continue funding it, we needed to do some loans to get us to that point. And it's tricky. I mean, anyone needs to, when you're building a business, you need to make it profitable.
Yeah.
Right. And so your business model needs to be profitable. And with having a SaaS company, it is, you also need to hire staff to support what's happening as you go. And so we have been kind of in this chase game where our monthly costs go up as our revenue goes up, and then our revenue goes up and our monthly cost goes up. And I've mapped it out. I see the tipping point, and we're getting closer to it. I think we've hired the staff that we can grow faster with. And so right now we're in a position where we're working to grow beyond that monthly expense. So I don't know. I'm like, did I answer that question? Did I go on like a million?
No, you did. You gave us a variety of examples of how, you know,
I mean,
how monies are intertwined in your business.
I was like,
right?
Oh, part of me wants to be like so vulnerable about being like, well, we put down this much money, and I don't, can I say that? Can I not say that?
It's entirely up to you. And, you know, I think the information that you shared was already so helpful.
Okay.
You know, just even in just finding investors and really finding the right ones, right? And it doesn't necessarily, like the product, there's nothing wrong with the product. The product was fine, but the timing of what the investors were willing to invest in and what you just didn't quite jive. So
we've worked with different coaches. We've definitely not done it alone. We've worked with coaches through Accelerate Okanagan who've, you know, advised us on marketing strategies. And so, you know, by leaning into some of those resources that we had, we were able to, you know, continue to move forward.
Yeah. So. And that in itself, I'm, you know, seeing as an investment too, in yourself and
the
knowledge.
And then I've learned how to market, how to copyright, how to do sales. You know, I've expanded my skill set beyond the software into a lot of different areas so that I could do and understand a lot of those things. And I find it's really helpful to understand all those different pieces of your business to then hire out. So I'm figuring out these pieces, and then I can hire out and then train somebody else to do it.
Got it. Do you have any other career advice? Because I think you sprinkled some in there too. Any career advice for current OTs, future OTs, who are interested in branching out into health technology and the work that you do?
You know, I've met with a few people who I've chatted with, and I think the biggest challenge is getting the tech built, because OTs have some great ideas. And so I do think at the early stages, it's about finding the right partners, right? And finding someone that has a complementary skill set. I am fortunate in that that person happened to be my husband. And so I know that that cost of getting what we would call a minimum viable product to get something into people's hands to use, that's the biggest upfront cost. Because you, I mean, yes, you can try to get some friends or family to invest in that to kind of build out that first chunk of your software. But that's definitely the first. I think when you're moving into a new sector like health tech, really doing your market research. And I know that that was said to me over and over, and I remember getting frustrated at the time, but talk to people, find out what people are looking for. Businesses that don't survive are the ones that don't understand the market and the ones that believe they're building a product that people want, but at the end of the day, it's not actually meeting the needs. And so we have worked really hard to be agile as a company, to listen to our customers, to listen to what they're saying, and to make adjustments and improvements as we go. And the more you can do that early on, like, set your ego aside. If you're building something for a larger community, you need to be open to what you're building, and then that what they would call a product market fit. And so, you know, you take your idea and then you have to test it out with people in different ways to make sure that's something that people will be interested in and will pay for.
I hear OT all over the place there. Just your ability to really identify the needs, right, of the groups that you're serving, and making adjustments and modifications along the way, depending on how it goes, adapting.
Yeah, I think we're so primed for understanding that. And I've met a lot of different business coaches along the way, and they're like, okay, but you have to be able to like take feedback and be adaptable. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like, that's no problem, you know? And I think that as OTs, generally, we do that better than other groups. But some people get, you know, get their feet really sticky in their ideas, and they don't want to bend because they think their way's the best. And that doesn't work when you're building something for other people. And that's what you're doing in software, in tech, you know, no matter what it is, whether it's a client group or a therapist group, you are building for other people, and you need to be agile and listen to what it is that those needs are, so that when you are then presenting your product, it has that fit.
Yeah. And it's effective. Are there any common myths or misconceptions about your role in health technology that you'd like to demystify today?
Oh, gosh. I don't actually know.
Do you need, how technologically savvy do you need to be? I know you've got your husband as backup at home, right? As part of your team. But yeah, how savvy do you need to be?
You know, that's actually a really interesting point. You do not need to be that tech savvy, because you need to understand enough. Like, I can sort of understand a very junior programming conversation, like enough to understand how the pieces fit together, but really you can be the visionary. And again, as long as you're willing to be flexible and to listen, then you don't need to, I think, you need to be as technologically inclined that you're dreaming, but you're listening to what's achievable, right?
Got it. Thank you so much, Ashley, for sharing all this great information, sharing your business, how you got there, and really super excited about the direction that it's going. If our listeners were interested in asking questions, reaching out, interested in branching out into health technology, is it okay if they reach out, and how do they do so?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn at Ashley Reina. R-E-I-N-A is the last name there. And then with Therabyte, I am Therabyte app on IG. That's probably the social platform I'm the most active on. And then that's T-H-E-R-A-B-Y-T-E. So it's a play on words between therapists and, you know, bytes, the computer.
Yes.
Measurement.
I love it. We're going to list all of that on our show notes too, so everyone has the correct spelling and is able to find you.
Yeah. And if people want to reach out by email, that works as well. It's ashley@therabyte.ca.
Fantastic. So thank you again so much for your time and for sharing with us your journey. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Patricia. Thanks for the chance to share it and for bringing out different pieces and being able to talk really about that process of building it. It's I don't always get to sit down and chat about all the ins and outs of what that has been like. And it's been a ride. So thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. There's so many OT practitioners out there who are super interested in technology. And I think talking about businesses like yours, talking about stories like yours, is only, you know, going to motivate and inspire others to follow suit. It's giving them a blueprint. It's giving them an example of how it can be done. And that's precisely what this platform is all about. So thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks so much.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.